Today on Edinburgh Radio News.
Hula hoop was a nice distraction, and you know, it meant kids could be more playful.
We find out about a big anniversary for a classic toy. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Edinburgh Radio News for Tuesday, March 5th, 2013. I'm Graham Clark. Every polling place doesn't just mean a lack of voters. Empty polling places doesn't just mean a lack of voters. It also means some groups in LA get more attention from their government than others. James Santelli reports on the real effects of low voter turnout.
When it's not a presidential year, the vast majority of registered voters in Los Angeles don't show up to polling places on Election Day. Call them lazy, call them cynical, but political analyst Dr. Sherry Bebich-Jeffy says it's not like this in every city.
L.A. isn't Chicago. L.A. isn't New York. L.A. isn't Boston. We don't eat, drink, and breathe electoral politics. So we don't have that socialization to begin with.
In Chicago, about 48% of the registered voters cast a ballot for mayoral elections. Here in Los Angeles, well, estimates range from 20 to 33% of registered voters that are expected to show up to vote today. But Jeffy says the mayoral candidates only have themselves to blame if people don't make the time to vote.
If you're not motivated by a candidate, by an issue, by a need to articulate a point of view, and if you looked at where we are today, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of people motivated. You're not going to go out to vote, period.
Low voter turnout does not divide equally across all social groups. Dr. Fernando Guerra studies voting demographics at Loyola Marymount Center for the Study of Los Angeles. He says almost half the population living in L.A. is Latino, but Latinos will only make up about 22% of the voters in today's election. So what are some common traits of non-voters in the city?
That population tends to be much more dependent on mass transit, tends to be much more need of affordable housing, tends to have much less medical care, tends to live on the margins to a much greater degree.
Guerra says voters in Los Angeles city elections also tend to skew older. They're more likely to be homeowners, too, and that's who candidates try to attract.
Once you own a home, you become very invested in that home, in that neighborhood, in the city, and you care about how issues are going to impact your property values. And therefore, homeowners, I think, are the number one group that get courted.
The Center for the Study of Los Angeles projects that only one in every six L.A. residents, about 600,000 people, will vote in today's election. No matter who wins, that is a small sliver of the city choosing government officials for everyone. Angelenos, at least some of them, will choose their new mayor from the two leading vote-getters on May 21st. James Santelli, Edinburgh Radio News.
It's Election Day in Los Angeles. Voters are casting ballots for mayor, city controller, and city attorney. And they're voting on whether to raise the sales tax by 0.5%. But, as Jerome Campbell reports, it's been a lonely day at the polls.
It's Election Day in Los Angeles. But not many people are at the polls. I went out to four polling stations in South LA to find that only the most dedicated residents came out to vote.
Voting for a mayor in your city is like voting for the president. That's how important it is.
That's Deja Crawford, a 26-year-old voter from Inglewood. She came out to the polling station at Independent Square Library with a long list of concerns for the ballot box.
Jobs, schools, I have a 6-year-old son. He's in through the LAUSD. I'm concerned about that. The economy, the cutbacks, society, the environment, I'm just worried about everything.
Crawford says she has voted in every local and national election since 2004 and believes everybody should vote. She says she used social media to encourage her community to the polls. But some people miss the message, like Joey Gultry, who passed the polling station on his way back from lunch.
Why?
And did you know today was Election Day?
I didn't. I thought it was November 6th, right?
I guess, when did you find out?
Last night, around 9 o'clock.
And who told you?
The security guard in the building. because the doors were closed, and he said that it was, they were voting today. I said, voting for what? And I think there's the mayor, right?
Goldtree says he stopped paying attention to local elections because they didn't answer his concerns.
You know, they're worried about the 405 freeways and the endeavors and everything else that they can have and spend millions of dollars on. And yet, you know, our kids are still sharing books.
Inside the polls, excitement for the city election wasn't any better. Poll worker Jesse Portillo says only 60 voters came out to the polls at Mount Moriah Baptist Church, and he didn't expect many more.
For us, and so I believe it's not really a lot of people around because it's just uninvolvement. You know, people got to work, they have their own things, they have responsibilities, they have a family to take care of.
And I waited at lunchtime at Mount Moriah Church for an hour, and nobody came. Polls close tonight at 8 p.m., but for those people who forgot about this election, they'll have another chance in the next election on May 17th. Jerome Campbell, Annenberg Radio News.
A poll worker from Watts is in stable condition after being shot this morning. The victim was involved in what may have been a domestic dispute that ended with gunfire outside the polling place where he was working. The man was taken to the hospital, and the polling place remained open. And if you're still not sure who to vote for in today's mayoral race, check out our profiles of all five candidates on AnnenbergRadio.org. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez died today after a two-year battle with cancer. The controversial leader came to power 14 years ago, the first of a wave of leftist Latin American leaders and a vocal opponent of capitalism. Gerardo Monk is an international relations professor here at USC. He says Chavez's legacy will be that of a leftist reformer in the vein of Cuba's Fidel Castro.
So he talked about bringing socialism for the 21st century to Venezuela as well as Latin America. So that included a lot of action on the part of the state, greater intervention in the economy, a lot of social programs.
Chavez's death was announced by Vice President Nicolas Maduro, who will take over the presidency until an election is held in 30 days. That election will likely pit Maduro against the opposition candidate Chavez defeated last year. Monk says Chavez's death leaves Venezuela in uncertain times.
He was basically everything, just ran the whole political show for the last 14 years. So uncertainty, and there's certainly going to be change. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen in terms of changing. There are concerns about possible violence. So in some sense, a period of a lot of uncertainty for all Venezuelans.
Chavez was 58. The Los Angeles County Jail system is the largest and most expensive in the nation, with over 20,000 prisoners. And that number could soon grow even higher. Criff Liu has the story.
The Board of Supervisors is hearing the debate on whether or not to spend $100 million in state funds to build and improve jail facilities. Alexander Yim is the chief of the Sheriff's Department's Correctional Services Division, who testified before the board for funding to improve jails in L.A.
As you know, we have some rather antiquated facilities. Central Jail, built in the 60s and 70s, so we're constantly doing several repairs, and our housing needs have changed a little bit.
But opponents say L.A.'s jail system needs to be reformed before it's expanded. Diana Zuniga, the statewide organizer of Californians United for Responsible Budget, or CURB, says excessive use of force in the county's jails is widespread.
It saddens me that we would be funneling more state money and county money at the end of the day into create just expanding a system that continues to treat people inhumanely.
LA's jails have come under scrutiny in recent years, as incidents of deputy brutality and other misconduct have been exposed. Zuniga believes the funds can be put to better use by creating a support system rather than incarcerating.
Throughout history, it doesn't seem that prisons or jails are actually an answer to stop people from recidivating. It's community input, community resources, community support within where they live that are actually keeping people out.
The Board of Supervisors will make its decision on whether or not to fund the expansion of jails by next week. Criff Liu, Annenberg Radio News.
L.A. County may get more affordable housing soon. The County Board of Supervisors voted today to spend $15 million on affordable housing. The money will come from redevelopment funds made available after the state dissolved the redevelopment agencies. Computers to replace books in libraries? That was thought to be the question for LA City Council today when it voted to consider all digital library. Camille Simmons has more.
Picture this, a library full of computers without a single book inside. That idea didn't sit well with some Los Angeles residents outside of the Pio Pico Library today.
I think it's a bad idea.
I think it takes away from the essence of what a library actually is.
I think these books should stay and that digital should stay on your TV screen.
Peter Persick is a spokesman for the LA Public Library.
This digital library would exist in the traditional library, which has both print materials and computers and other electronic resources. People don't have to worry about the computers replacing the books.
At least not yet. The Los Angeles City Council voted today to find out if it's feasible to make the Pio Pico Library completely digital.
This is also being done in a library in San Antonio, Texas, and we wanted to see how that might work at that particular library.
Bayer County in San Antonio is looking to be the first in the nation to open an all-digital library in the fall. Bayer County spokesperson Laura Jesse says the new library will be totally book-free.
We also see this as kind of a technology center where they can come in, use the computers. We'll have 50 PCs, 25 laptops, I think, and 25 tablets.
Jesse said that library has some doubters, too. But the most important thing to remember...
we still have access to the San Antonio Library.
And with it, access to books. City Council doesn't know how long it will take for the feasibility report to come out. When it does, the council says it will move forward on the digital part of the Pio Pico Library, however big it is. Camille Simmons, Annenberg Radio News.
There are gray days ahead, folks. We'll have clouds and a chance of rain all the way to the end of the week. Highs will be in the 60s, and lows will be in the 50s and 40s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we have a write-in candidate for mayor who's talking about today's city elections. Tis the season for football in Los Angeles. Evan Budrovich has a preview of spring football here at USC.
As spring football kicks into gear, Gary Paskowitz, a writer for the ESPN blog We Are USC, shares his insight on all things SC football. He says the biggest challenge this team faces is ignoring distractions.
Yeah, we've got to turn the page from last year. Well, that starts at the top, and setting that tone and getting them refocused, I think it's probably the biggest challenge Kiffin has this spring.
The offense will look a lot different this season as Matt Barkley has left for the NFL draft. To fill his shoes, Paskowitz expects a thrilling three-horse race.
Well, what I hope happens is that somebody does distinguish themselves, whether that's Max Wittig, whether it's Kessler, whether it's even a Max Brown. But I just hope it's a clear-cut decision at some point, be that at the end of spring or in fall camp.
The Trojans collapsed down the stretch last season, losing 5 out of the last 6 games. Paskowitz believes the Trojans' talented offense can spark the road to recovery.
There are so many veteran guys coming back. You know, you've still got 4 of 5 on the offensive line coming back, and then you've got, you obviously had the returning Biletnikoff Award winner, and then, like you say, a veteran backfield. I look to the offense to kind of come out pretty darn sharp here.
Fans will be able to witness 8 public workouts this spring after not being able to watch any last season. Paskowitz says these fans will have plenty of storylines to keep their eyes on.
Do we get a little bit of that toughness back? Do things look crisp on defense with the 52? Progress, you know, I think is what people are looking for to get back to the type of Trojan football that we all know.
The Trojans are taking the field as we speak, with exciting action unfolding all the way to the much-anticipated spring scrimmage on April 13th. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
Today is the 50th anniversary of the patent for everyone's favorite hip-twirling toy, the hula hoop. Producer Catherine Davis did some research to find out more about the landmark toy.
At the end of the 1950s, kids wanted one hot item.
Hula hoop,
Professor Leo Brody, who researches 50s pop culture trends at USC, says the hula hoop wasn't just popular because it was fun, but because it was a sign of the times.
Hula hoop was a nice distraction, and you know, it meant kids could be more playful rather than having to go through air raid drills.
In addition to keeping kids' minds off the looming threat of nuclear war, Brody says hula hoops showed off new technology.
Remember, the hula hoops were plastic, and this was like in the early age of plastics when things were starting to, plastic was starting to become much more prevalent.
And what about the swinging gesture kids made to keep the hoops going? Brody says that was a good sign of cultural changes, too.
I think there's a kind of erotic side to it as well. I associate it with the kind of dances that were starting to come in, like the twist. And so it's, you know, it's part of the sort of intriguingly repressed culture of the 50s, where kinds of things were going on under the surface that were about to erupt when the 1960s came along.
50 years ago today, on March 5th, 1963, the official patent for the wildly popular hula hoop was registered by Wham-O Toys, the same company that brought us the Frisbee and the Super Bowl. Why don't you go and roll your hoop? Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
A number of hopeful politicians are looking to beat the odds today, vying for public office as independent candidates. To find out what it's like to run as an outsider, I talked to Melissa Balin, a filmmaker, activist, and official write-in candidate for mayor of Los Angeles.
My name is Melissa White Chocolate Balin. I have been associated with Occupy, but today 11% of our fine city is coming out to vote, and at least 12 of them, a jury of my peers, is writing in me, Melissa Balin, for mayor.
When did your campaign for the office of mayor begin?
I declared my candidacy for mayor on November 7th, 2012. And we made a big lackluster campaign to gather signatures. We didn't, unfortunately, get the required 1,000 signatures to get my good name on the ballot. My name became an official write-in prospect.
I mean, what did you have to do to be a write-in candidate?
If you have aspirations, you only need to establish 1 year of residency within the city of Los Angeles, and you need to get either 1,000 signatures. If not, you could get 500 signatures and pony up $300.
What are your thoughts on, you know, the quote-unquote outsider candidates running for mayor today?
Nobody's even heard of them. Nobody knows it's even happening. And it is kind of disturbing. There are already, before the polls close, allegations about ethical issues with regards to the write-in ballots. It's a big issue. It's the Ethics Commission allegedly may or may not have fully apprised all the polling stations of how to properly write in a candidate. And so it's kind of unclear what the $300 the write-in candidates pay is for.
You're interested in making your efforts speak to some broader issues.
We can't phone it in, and we have to keep participating. Team Balin for mayor is in it for the long haul. Everyone should run for office. We should all be our own mayor, and we should be as sovereign as these ass clowns who think that there's no discipline for them.
All right. Melissa Balin, filmmaker, activist, write-in candidate, official write-in candidate for L.A. mayor.
Thanks so much for exposing the truth.
Getting good at something can mean going through an awkward phase while you're still working out the kinks. And while most of us wouldn't want to share these frustrating moments, reporter Melissa Kaplan does. She's a longtime musician writing and performing her first musical. She's sharing her process for Annenberg Radio News. For a second installment, Kaplan explores how she learned to let go of her fear and stay true to her artistic vision.
Make your own curvilinear pattern on the floor. Try not to just fall.
It's Saturday morning, and I'm pacing in weird patterns on hardwood floor in the upstairs of a church in Pasadena. Sometimes I shout, "Ha ha!" Move my mouth in a clockwise pattern, or say, "Unique, New York." I narrowly miss colliding with my five other classmates, all doing the same thing. It may seem eccentric, but this is part of my process. I'm writing and performing a musical, so I need to know how to become a character. And these acting classes are helping me access my emotions and my body, and think in dimensions I'd never considered when I was performing in rock bands. In class, we each take turns performing monologues or scenes from plays and TV and movies, and one person shows, whatever requires being open and vulnerable in front of others. This class could easily save relationships or stop world wars if the right people were to attend. This is the next level for me. It's uncomfortable, but fun! This also isn't my first acting class. I started into this world last fall when I took solo performance class at USC. I used to harbor a very ill-fated combo of a mantra. I want to do something new, and I want to be the best at it right now. This line of thinking usually meant preventing myself from even starting anything in order to save myself from being bad at it. But I had to push through now. I was being graded. I'd come to class with the concept ready. I was going to tell the story of a knife juggler that ran away from a carnival. I spent 3 months workshopping crude drafts and figuring out the subtleties of my character. And 3 weeks before our class showcase, I called up my ex-band's producer, Michael. We put in a solid 15-hour weekend recording background tracks for me to sing to on stage. Opening night was a head trip. I got up, cued the music, and began singing my opener. Dragging me down since I roamed to your town, my rep is. And then I found myself face-to-face with somebody's very bored uncle, sitting with his head in his hand and his legs wide open in the front row. It took some effort to compartmentalize my reaction to his lack of reaction. But I'm a pro. It was fine. I kept going. I roamed off stage as the last song faded, and after I got some rest, my solo performance teacher emailed me about her Saturday morning classes. I didn't hesitate. Bored uncles be damned. Melissa Kaplan, Annenberg Radio News.
It is National School Breakfast Week. This week, the National Department of Agriculture is promoting healthy breakfast programs for school kids across the country. The organization Share Our Strength recently did a study to find out what effect breakfast has on kids in the classroom. We spoke with Kumar Chandran from Share Our Strength to find out more.
What we found was that kids who eat school breakfast are more likely to attend, on average, 1.5 more days of school and more likely to do better on math tests and actually achieving 17.5% higher math test scores. So really, really great results around just simply increasing school breakfast participation.
A large-scale spoon installation was unveiled in Hollywood today to promote breakfast for school children. Now we check in with Ashley Regal to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Hi, guys. Thanks very much. Coming up tonight on ATVN, we will have extensive coverage of the Los Angeles primary election, reaction from leaders around the world to Hugo Chavez's death, and a record day on the stock market.
Can I ask, what have you seen so far as election results? Have you seen poll results as low
as
we have?
I've heard that turnout was really low, yeah. And I myself haven't gotten to vote yet. I'm going to be a late voter, so hopefully others will get out there and vote as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Ashley.
Thank you, guys.
Some low-income Californians may now qualify to get cell phones. The California Public Utilities Commission extended its Lifeline phone program to include cellular service. Two companies, Assurance Wireless and Reach Out Wireless, will begin offering the phones. Qualifying low-income Californians will have access to 250 talk minutes and 250 text messages per month. That's it for this Tuesday. Kat Boza produces the arts and culture segment, and Catherine Davis is the newscast producer. Our executive producer is Aaron Schrank. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Graham Clark. Check us out on Twitter at Annenberg Radio News. Thanks to James Burt for everything. Have a nice night.